Call House Judiciary together to order here March 5th at 7 minutes after the hour of 1. You would, Christie, would you call the roll?
Yes. Representative Milley?
Here.
Representative Pruitt? Representative Gruenberg?
Here.
Representative Foster?
Here.
Representative Ledoux?
Here.
Representative Lynn?
Here.
And Chair Keller?
Here. Okay, the plan today is to hear initial opening comments on the HGR 33, the Judicial Council Resolution Amendment. And then what I would like to do, I think there's going to be a lot of people interested in testifying, and mostly I want to get right into the testimony and go as far as we can with the testimony. And at 2:30, no later than 2:30, I would like to set that aside. We don't have to move that today at all. And go to HB 255, which is the bill on drones. And that's back before us with a CS that I think is going to be ready to go that we can consider acting on. And then we will, depending on where we're at with HGR 33, we'll come back to this. We'll just continue on Friday. So that's the plan. With that, Representative Gruenberg.
Do we have anything else on the agenda for Friday?
Representative Gruenberg, we had the ombudsman bill on there pending referral. That was what was on the schedule. Likely won't get to us because that we'll be hearing that in the morning at 8 o'clock in State Affairs. And if we act on it, like I think the chair would like very much to do, it still is going to be tight getting here. But if it gets here, that's, you know, we'll just have to play that one by ear. So the only option for Friday is the Ombudsman Bill, HB 127, and continuation of HGR 33. And perhaps if we don't act on HB 255 today, you know, depending on how that goes.
Well, what is that?
That's the drone bill.
Oh, I thought it was pretty much ready to go out.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it should, but you never know for sure.
I was going to put on an amendment dealing with an interstate compact, but
shocking.
No, we just passed that out. The interstate compact.
The representative Ledoux, you mean the drone bill? No, you know, that was an example of how not to run a committee, letting everybody talk at once. Is there any other questions on what the intent for today and Friday is?
Let the record reflect that.
Representative Gruenberg?
The record reflect that last thing should be off the table. You know? Forget it. Sorry.
Okay. So all we're going to do with HGR 33 is I'm going to ask my staff to come and just describe the resolution, what it is, and then we're going to go right to public testimony. I would ask for no discussion at this point until we hear from many people that have a lot of depth of understanding that will help us as we continue on. So if you would, Ernest, identify yourself for the record and give us the outline.
Mr. Chair, just a
question. Representative Gruenberg?
So we have something in front of us. Do we want to have a motion to adopt the U version for discussion only? I will object, but at least we'll have something in front of us then.
I'm going to hold off on that. What version came to us originally there? It wasn't the U version. Version A. Just for clarification, thank you for asking. We'll work off version A, but there's a couple things included in version U, which my staff will also describe, but pending, it'll be for pending action of the committee. So that way, when the testifiers are testifying, if you have a question related to something's in version U that's not in A, that's fine. That's completely okay, but we haven't, you know, we aren't really, it hasn't been presented. So let's just go with A.
Questions will be in order at the appropriate.
Questions are in order.
Thank you.
So version A is in front of us. Ernest, do you want to describe it?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ernest Prox, staff for Representative Keller. What you have here before you today is House Joint Resolution 33, and this proposes to amend the Constitution of the United States at the next general election by giving Alaskans the option to increase the non-attorney membership of the Judicial Council. And we're going to bump up the non-attorney members from the existing three to a total of six. So it'd be six totals. We'll be adding three members for a total of six non-attorney members. I'm going to stress at the point or at the beginning of this that HJR 33, it's a friendly resolution, that we are not trying to target, attack, disparage, you know, whatever you want to call it, the Judicial Council or the actions of the Chief Justice, that we are trying to help and improve its function and help help the nomination and selection of our judges and justices to better reflect Alaska in the 21st century as opposed to staying back in the 1960s when this was first originally established. There's three purposes behind HJR 33. The first is to enhance the Judicial Council's vetting process regarding the nomination and retention recommendations for judges and justices. The second is to enhance the Judicial Council's credibility in the mind of the general public. There's some particular functions that will be discussed a little bit later that have various groups within Alaska to take issue to and have some concerns about, and so HJR 33 is an attempt to seek some remedies for those concerns. Thirdly, the final purpose for HJR 33 is to protect the Chief Justice of the state of Alaska from partisan attack when under the Judicial Council's, under the Constitution and also the bylaws of the Judicial Council, the Chief Justice is required to vote when there's a tie or when his vote could change the outcome of a particular vote that's being taken. And there have been a number of votes. There's been a number in the past 2 years that have brought some concern among various groups, and the votes taken by the Chief Justice have been placed under scrutiny and kind of the motivations questioned. And so what we're trying to do is, you know, regardless if there's a problem there or not, let's act preemptively and help the Chief Justice out and reduce his likelihood of being subject to partisan attack for votes that they take. There's kind of four areas or three areas of problems, concerns, however you want to just characterize them, that HJR 33 is responding to. The first is that the Judicial Council's current membership, it severely hampers its constitutional responsibility in properly representing Alaska's diverse geographic and cultural makeup. You can find that in Article 4, Section 8 of the Alaska Constitution. And I'll just read it off kind of the relevant portion real quick, that, you know, regarding the Judicial Council appointments, and this is for both, if I understand it correctly, both attorney and non-attorney members, that appointments shall be made with due consideration to area representation and without regard to political affiliation. And this, as I said, this is kind of both responsibility of the both the appointments made, you know, by the governor and also by the Bar Association. Right now, the current makeup of the Judicial Council, the three attorney and the three non-attorney, we feel that's perhaps inadequate to represent Alaska today. That back in the 1960s, there's a lot less mobility in Alaska. The population centers are, you know, there's kind of the big three, but today we're much more connected, not only in terms of travel but also information, and so people have a much enhanced capacity to expand to represent their voice. We feel that the current membership is too small and it hampers the ability to meet its constitutional mandate. The second one, as I kind of indicated in the introduction, there's an apparent conflict of interest in the mind of the public when the Chief Justice is required to cast a tie-breaking vote, whether this is because there's a split between the attorney members and the non-attorney members, or if there's a tie vote, or if his vote can influence the outcome of an election. Say that there's a member that's absent that day, the Chief Justice could be required to vote in that instance. Right now, the Chief Justice can have this final say in whether in forwarding or not forwarding the names of potential judges and justices that he or she may be working with either directly or indirectly in the future. And there have been votes that reflect this occurring, and there has been concerns. The third issue that we're trying to address is there's a characterized as an imbalance in the representation of the Judicial Council's makeup. If you look at Alaska's population just in terms of proportion, the attorney members outnumber the non-attorney members in terms of proportional representation. And these are numbers that I've been provided by that were, I think, discussed in the discussion of the Senate version. There's approximately 4,200 members in the Bar Association, Alaska Bar Association, today, and there's a little over 3,000 that are active. I don't know if all of them are necessarily in Alaska. Probably some aren't. But at any rate, if you take that number and divide it out by the approximate number of Alaskans, there's about a little over 735,000. They represent 0.5% of the Alaska population, yet they make up 57% of the Judicial Council's voting power. In contrast, you have the non-attorney population, the rest of the Alaska public. They make up, give or take, the remaining 99%, yet they have only 43% of the Judicial Council's voting power. And so there appears to be an imbalance in the representation of the in terms of the non-attorney and voting and attorney members that are on the council today, and HJR 33 seeks to restore that balance and give the public, give the non-attorney side a greater voice in the discussion and vetting of the candidates for judges and justices. So that's kind of the, in general, the what we're trying to accomplish with HR 33, the problems that have been brought up to us and other members in the legislature, and these aren't hard and fast solutions. They're up for discussion, and we'll see where it goes. Oh, and the proposed CS. There's two new ideas that you can give your consideration to. The first is that it would require all members of the Judicial Council, regardless if they're attorneys or non-attorneys, to be confirmed by the legislature. And the other one is that in the current version, the A version that you have, the Judicial Council, the resolution proposes that the Judicial Council act by a concurrence of a majority of its members which are participating in the vote. So whether that's two people that show up or everybody, it's however many people are there, that's whatever it takes to act. But a proposed change in the CS is to require that keep the existing arrangement that you have in the way the Judicial Council works now. So if you bumped up the number of members, it would have to act by a concurrence of five members rather than just a majority of whoever shows up that day. So that's it would be keeping the existing language in the way the council works, just updated to reflect if you have nine regular voting members in there. So those are the two proposals in the CS that you can consider as you discuss HR 33.
Thank you, Ernest. And we may call you back up later if there's more questions what's in there. But what we're going to do is just jump right into the public testimony. We have a long list, and we want to hear from as many as we can. So thank you. Dave Parker, are you online? We're going to start with you. A name I know.
Yes, I am.
Dave, it says that you're representing yourself. If you would, tell us a little bit about yourself and the testimony, please. Thank you.
Be happy to do that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dave Parker. I'm a resident of Wasilla, Alaska, and I come to you as a private citizen today. My background, as you know, has been in law enforcement in the state of Alaska. But also, I just want to emphasize the fact that I am a private citizen, but I am also a council member on the Judicial Council approved by the legislature last year. I began my term in March of last year. And I would really like to speak to this, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Dave, yes, please. Give us your testimony, and what we have done is jump right into the bill so the committee members may have questions for you, and I will, let them ask in the middle if it's okay with you, not disrupt you, but go ahead.
Yeah, if there are questions, please butt in, not a problem. I'd like to speak in favor of HGR 33, and there are basically three reasons why I believe that this would be a good bill. I believe, first of all, that it would bring more accountability to the Judicial Council in that it would tie it more closely to the citizenry of the state of Alaska. Our judicial system is not the possession or province of the Judicial Council or the judiciary itself or the legislature, that may come as some bad news to some folks, or especially the police or the Bar Association. I think it has to be accountable to the people. Increasing the number of non-bar association members on that committee will make it so that the council is more representative of the populace. We will receive more direct input from the citizens. I believe also that it will allow more diversity, certainly geographical diversity, but I think of several towns and villages around the state of Alaska who have never had a judicial council member. I'd love to see someone from Hoosier or Mountain Village or Elfin Cove or any of the myriad of towns and villages that have never been represented on that council. It's very easy for a council or a judiciary or a legislature to get out of touch if they're not accountable to the people. And this is just one more way that I think that we can bring back accountability to the real owners of our court system, the people of the state of Alaska. The second reason that I feel like this would be a good bill to pass is because I believe it will bring more balance to our judicial selection process and to the review of sitting judges where their retention is concerned. More balance, I think that all of us on the council, and especially the non-attorney members, treasure the input of the Chief Justice, of the Director of the Council, of the attorney members of the Council. And their input is so very important because they understand the finities and the vagaries of our judicial systems better than the other council members. But I do feel that it is still heavily weighted towards the Bar Association, as was just explained. Four or seven votes are Bar Association members. None of those folks have been through the approval process by the legislature. In addition, there's other Bar Association influence. First of all, the director of the Judicial Council is a Bar Association member. Also, the bar survey is something that is very heavily relied upon by the council when they consider judicial applicants. Now, I must admit, sometimes that Bar Association survey is a mystery to me because we'll read one evaluation of a candidate that says they're Satan incarnate, and then the next one will say they walk on water. So sometimes it's a little confusing to a simple man like me, but that is one of the main sources of the information that we use in determining whether or not a candidate is chosen. I think that this mitigate the influence of a specialized group, that is the Bar Association, and again, bring that council back more in line with the citizenry of Alaska. And finally, I'd like to speak to the stipulation that a simple majority be required to forward a name for consideration by the governor for vacancy. I think that will give equality of strength to each vote of each member on the council. Right now, the Judicial Council, as you know, requires 4 votes to forward a name. So that's 4 of 6 or 4 of 7, depending upon how the votes fall, in order to advance a name. This gives more weight to a negative vote than to a positive vote. And once a person passes through that process, their work is not done. They still have to go before the governor of the state of Alaska, duly elected by the citizens of Alaska, and they have to explain themselves, their philosophies, their ideas. They have to talk about their background, and that final vetting takes place, and then the governor can make his choice. But all in all, I think HJR 33 will enable the citizens to be more participating in this whole process. That's basically all I have to say. Are there any questions that I might answer?
Representative Millett has a question for you.
Hi, Lieutenant Parker. It's good to hear your voice again. We miss you on the TV all the time. How long have you been serving on the Judicial Council?
I was appointed last March to the Judicial Council.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Any other questions for Dave? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Appreciate you taking time.
Mr. Chair.
Wait, hold on a little bit, Dave. Representative Grunberg has a question.
Rather than interrupting one witness with questions and doing that each time, I may reserve my questions until we've had more witnesses. So I'd like to get through as many as we can. But I do reserve my right. That doesn't mean they have to stick around, but if they are, I may want to ask them a question, if
okay.
That's with the chair's permission.
Second up, Adam Trombley, are you online?
Yes, I'm online. I just wanted to call in and support for all the reasons from the previous and Mr. Keller's chief of staff as well. And I should also mention I'm a member of the Board of Governors. So I do support the increase in the Judicial Council members. That's all.
Thank you very much, Adam. Any questions for Representative Grunberg? Have a question for you.
Yeah, hello, Adam. I think you probably want to indicate what your official position. You hold an office, do you not?
I do.
He said he was speaking for himself.
What is your name?
Adam Trombley.
Are you not the Adam Trombley who's on the Municipal Assembly in Anchorage?
Yes, I did. I just mentioned that I'm also on the Anchorage Assembly.
General
Assembly.
The connection is really bad. Adam, try to say that again a little closer to... Are you on a... I don't know,
sure.
Is it a cell phone or what?
But
it's not working. We don't have you at all, wow.
Try it now. Is it yours?
Adam, if you can hear, and you have more to say, feel free to call back and we'll put you through.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, for the record, I believe Mr. Trombley said he was on the Board of Governors of the Bar, and he is also represents the district that Representative Ledoux and I live in East Anchorage on the Assembly.
I believe that's true. And he also said that he supported the concept of expanding the Judicial Council. So we got a little bit, anyway, of what Adam said. William Clark, are you online?
Hello?
Yeah, William, we have you loud and clear. If you would, give us your name, who you represent, a little bit about yourself and your testimony, please.
Yes, sir. I'll just do my bottom lines first, just in case we get cut off. At least I'm on record and you understand what I, my interest in the House bill here. My full name is William F. Clark. I am retired. I've lived in Alaska since 1978. I was a pilot in the Air Force for 20 years. I had two combat tours in Vietnam. I retired from the Air Force in 84 and went to work for an engineering firm in Anchorage for 16 years. And I retired from that in 2005. And after that, I started my third professional career. So right now, I'm a professional full-time grandpa. Best job I ever had in my life. I was a member of the council, the judicial council. My tour ended in February of last year, so my experience with the council is current and fresh, and I just have a few items I would like to pass on to you here. The other thing I can say is that Mr. Parker and the gentleman who came on at the beginning of your session there and described the bill actually said everything I wanted to say, plus a lot of other things that I hadn't thought of and I completely agreed with. But I'm very, very excited about the resolution. I think the figures are correct. I think that this is a good split. It gives the council 9 voting members. So this goes a long ways in trying to prevent tie votes. It also doubles the number of public members, which I think is absolutely necessary. And it keeps the attorney members at 3, which is adequate. And I just wanted to state publicly that, and I think I speak for a lot of people too, that this is not a criticism of the professional members. By professional, I mean the attorney members who serve on the council. The attorney members I served with on the council were very good, very professional. I really enjoyed working with them, specifically Kevin Fitzgerald, who is a very good friend of mine on the council, and Julie Willoughby, who practices in Juneau. They were very professional, very good, and were very good friends to me on the council. They provided some very good input. I think that the public membership has to be increased for 2 reasons. Number one, and Mr. Parker brought this out, it's a very good one, we need better geographical representation in the state, and this will increase our geographical representation by 3 more. If you find that inadequate in your discussions, then I suggest maybe you add 2 more public members, which would bring the total to from 9 to 11. Keep it so that it's always an odd number. I would not exceed 11. I think that's just about as far as we need to go. The ratio we currently have with the bar and the general public in Alaska, the citizens that I represented, is about 4 to or 1 to 180. So that's quite a ratio. And I think the public membership of the council has to be increased to respect that ratio. We obviously couldn't mimic it. I mean, that would make a huge council. But by respecting the ratio and trying our best to bring it, make it effective, I think your solution is excellent. I think it's right on target. My feeling about the resolution, if it ever became a bill and ever went to the public, it would pass. And it just wouldn't pass by a narrow margin. It would pass very well, very comfortably. I truly, truly want this bill put out to the public. One of the arguments I've heard against this concept is that overrides of the public members, or let's just say a split of 3-3 in the vote, are, quote, rare, quote. Well, it was not rare during my tenure, especially the last 2 years where we were considering vacancies to the Supreme Court. And the public members were overridden 3 times. This is not rare. And 2 very good, highly qualified, unimpeachably good professional judges. I'm speaking specifically of Judge McDonald in the Superior Court in Fairbanks, and Judge Guidi in the Superior Court in Anchorage were trumped by a tiebreaker from the chief. It was two different chiefs. We were absolutely stunned that these two men would have been turned down. It made no sense at all. No reason was given.
Mr. Chair.
William, we have. Do you mind if we interrupt for questions? I forgot to ask you that.
This is a point of order, Mr. Chair.
Point of order, Representative Grunberg.
I believe the Open Meetings Act makes exceptions for personnel matters, that those things are not normally done when we're getting into personalities in an open session. And I would therefore respectfully request that if we're going to get into personalities on why an individual was or was not sent up, that we take that in an executive session or disregard it, because it makes it difficult, to say the least, to get into the merits when a charge like that is made, and we really cannot do so properly. Otherwise, I do not think we should consider individual decisions on a personnel matter.
William, if you would proceed and take Representative Grunberg's comments to heart. Don't talk personalities on this. Just if you would give your testimony. Thank you.
Oh, okay. No, the point is well taken. No problem with that. Mm-hmm. And I'm nearly finished with my remarks anyway. My bottom line is I am definitely in favor of the bill, and I think it solves a lot of problems. And I think it will be a better approach to representing the public. And the other thing is to increasing the number of candidates that are presented to the governor. This was another thing that concerned me with the mechanics of the current council, is that I just felt more candidates should have been presented to the governor, because the governor is the one who actually has to bite the bullet on it. He's the one who has to make the decisions, has to make the appointment, and then has to accept the responsibility for the appointment. And my thought was that as much care as possible should be given to that consideration and given to the governor. So I've come to the end of my notes, and as I said, Mr. Parker and the gentleman who introduced the bill and described it, or the resolution and described it, really covered everything I wanted to say about it. So I will conclude my remarks with that. Thank you very much.
William, thank you for taking time to call, and thank you for your service. We have another question from Representative Grunberg.
Yeah, this is just a little bit along the line of what I was saying earlier. I certainly don't object to the comment that more names should be sent up generally, but to get into specifics, whether more names should have been sent up in a given case, again, I don't think we should look at individual cases, because we really can't explore that in an open session.
Okay.
Oh, I understand.
Okay, again, thank you. I see no other questions this time, William. Thanks again.
Thank you.
We're going to go to another name I know, Lauren Levin. Are you online?
Can you hear me okay?
Loud and clear, sir.
Okay.
Identify yourself and who you're representing, and I suppose it makes you wish you were back here, right?
I'm Lauren Lehman. I said that, but a voice came on. It's kind of like Siri on my cell phone talking to me when I sit a certain way. You know, I don't know if you get these electronic messages. But I'm a resident of Anchorage. It was good to be with you and all of you on the committee a couple weeks ago when I was in the Capitol, and just observing you on the floor and in joint session, I'll have to admit, gave me very fond memories of my days in the legislature, and almost made me wish I were back there for some of your work. But anyway, I'm a former member of the House and of the Senate, and I served a term as Lieutenant Governor. And I'm calling in support of HDR 33. And I want to go through just a few reasons. I was raised in Alaska, and if I tell you that it was in my youngest years is during territorial days, it's not too hard to figure out my age, but I will say I have memories of the time when the Alaska Constitution was drafted and debated, and some of the delegates to the convention were our family friends, and I've met some of these since, and during my adult life, I've been privileged to know many of them, and I have great respect for the work they did. And I believe, in general, our Constitution is a good document, although it's not perfect. And I'd say it probably isn't perfect because none of us are perfect people, and I certainly put myself in that category. And that's why we have an amendment process, and we've amended our Constitution 28 times. And I would agree with the argument that we shouldn't take the responsibility for amending our Constitution lightly, including on this resolution. But I'll say that I have personally been involved in four amendments to the Constitution that I believe were very important, and they're in the Constitution today and playing a very important part in establishing our government. And, of course, in addition to those I participated in personally, I have voted on a number of others as a voter when I wasn't in the legislature. But you who hold elected office today should consider this important fact. When you analyze our Constitution and evaluate how well it works or doesn't work, you enjoy an advantage that the delegates to the Constitutional Convention didn't have, and that is, of course, the benefit of 55 years of hindsight in how well our Constitution really has worked. And regarding the process by which we select judges, or at least advance names to a governor so a governor can select judges and justices, I would submit that we can do better. The current process, I believe, is too dominated by members of the Alaska Bar Association. Of course, as you all know, they control four of the seven seats on the council because the Chief Justice is also a dues-paying member of the bar. And while the Bar Association has somewhere in the order of 4,000 members and get four members on the Judicial Council, the three public members represent, what do we have now, about 730,000 Alaskans. And I mean no disrespect to the members of the bar, many of whom are my friends, including several in the legislature. I know one on the Judiciary Committee that's listening in today, and I recognize his voice as well.
I thought you were going to say Gabrielle Ledoux. Thank you.
Lauren, go ahead. That was a committee management problem here. Representative Grunberg, did you have a question for Lauren?
Hi, Lauren. Thank you for the compliment. We're good friends.
Yeah, I know.
I know you are too.
I should have recognized the other one from East Anchorage as well. Sorry, Gabrielle, I didn't mean any disrespect to you and your membership in the Bar Association.
Let me interrupt a little bit. Representative Noah has a question for you.
Thanks, Lieutenant Governor Lehman. My question to you is, you know, I keep going back, and for some reason this session I've been doing a lot of little history searching on the Constitutional Convention, and one of the things that was brought up at our last meeting is that we didn't have that many attorneys in territorial days, so that's one of the reasons why the Judicial Council was so small. It was just hard to get attorneys up here. Now we have a plethora of attorneys in Alaska. So I look back at with what they were dealing with in 1959 and realize that times have changed, and this is one of the places where the Constitution might need it to be adapted for our population base now and to get people more involved. One thing I will note that when we have elections for retainment of judges, everybody automatically does yes without any knowledge of what the judges do, and you know, I'll tell you, when I was a new voter, I did the exact same thing. I just voted them all back in, just not knowing what, you know, what was going on. And so the other problem that I have is that if you go out and look for the information on judges and how they work their courts, it's hard to find information on how they treat people that are put before them. And so I see that as another flaw. I mean, you know, and how a bar poll isn't, you know, done on in a sitting judge. It's done prior before they get into office. So maybe that's another flaw in our the way we pick our judges and retain our judges.
Well, if you're looking for a response from me, I would say that any way the process can be more transparent and open and information available to people so they can make informed decisions would be a good thing. Regarding your comment about the number of attorneys who might have been available to serve in the earliest days of statehood, you are correct. And also, if we look at our own population, our population has probably multiplied, I'm going to say, about 5 to 6 times as many people are in Alaska today than were in Alaska during 1955-56, just before statehood, when the delegates met up on the campus of the University of Alaska. And so, we have a lot more attorneys in practice in Alaska today, but we also have a lot more people. So both of those things are true.
Representative Ledoux has a question for you, Lauren.
No, it's not exactly a question. And I'm trying to keep an open mind on this amendment. I actually have some, I mean, I'm not sure whether we need to change the makeup of the Judicial Council. But I guess I'd like to look at the recommendation process of the Judicial Council, which is not a constitutional mandate of the Judicial Council. That's what makes me kind of uncomfortable, is that we have this governmental body who is recommending that somebody be retained or not retained. And I look at it in the context of our own campaigns. And I sure feel uncomfortable if there was, you know, some quasi-official or official body that was sticking in the election pamphlet and running ads that, you know, that this representative or that representative should or should not be retained. That would just make me uncomfortable. So while I'm not really comfortable with this amendment of changing the selection process for judges, I'm not there yet. I would like at some point to look into the process that the Judicial Council uses for recommendations, because that was something that's not in the Constitution, and we just gave the Judicial Council that authority, and that doesn't involve a constitutional amendment.
Well, I would say in response to Representative Ledoux, I hope that my testimony and the remainder of my testimony will help give you more comfort on this amendment. And, of course, you as a committee have the opportunity to craft it in a way that, gives you comfort but also, provides good service to people of Alaska. And regarding your second comment about recommendations for retention, I share some of those concerns. I saw happening in recent years, very recent years, some things that I had never seen before, and that caused me great angst to see public monies used in such a way as they were, to recommend, in that case, recommend retention. But of course, they could be used and have been in the past to recommend non-retention. Mr. Chairman,
Before you proceed, I want your rest of your testimony. Representative Greenberg has a question.
Mr. Chair, would you prefer that I hold my questions until he completes his testimony?
Lauren, Representative Greenberg, did you hear his question? I'll leave that up to you.
I heard his question.
The question is, would you prefer, I'll wait until Lieutenant Governor Lehman has completed his testimony before I decide whether to ask a question.
Okay. Lauren, please proceed.
Okay. And I think if we look to other boards and commissions in state government, many of them have more members than the Judicial Council has. For example, the professional board that I am regulated by is the Board of Registration for Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors, and all of those members must be nominated by the governor and confirmed by the legislature, even though our professional societies may play a role in the process in suggesting names. You know, they don't have the right to name the names, and certainly not without legislative confirmation. And the Board of Governors for the Alaska Bar itself has 12 members. The university's Board of Regents has 11. The Workers' Compensation Board has 18. And the Alaska Commission of Judicial Conduct has 9. And of course, there are many examples of boards and commissions that have fewer members, but we're talking about the Alaska Judicial Council, a panel of just 7 members, so effectively 3 and occasionally 4 members have the power to determine essentially the composition of one of our 3 branches of government, and that puts a lot of authority in the hands of just a few people. And in a state as diverse as Alaska, with a population, I suggested perhaps as much as 5, maybe more times the size of what we had at statehood, I believe it's a mistake to concentrate so much power in the hands of just so few people. And it's also important to recall that on the council, 3 of the members are chosen by the Bar Association and are accountable exclusively to the bar. And some others have mentioned this. They're not selected by the governor, nor do they have to stand for legislative confirmation as the public members do. And that creates a fundamental problem with accountability. In a representative democracy, it's important for a clear majority of council members to be selected through a process that is more accountable to the people. And I know in testimony offered elsewhere, and perhaps in testimony that you will hear by others to this committee, some will say, the system is fine. It has served Alaska well for 55 years. Don't fix what isn't broken. And although I acknowledge that the process has allowed some very fine people to be selected as judges, and they have served with distinction, it has also kept other extraordinarily qualified people from even being considered for appointment by the governor. And that, I believe, is just wrong. I personally believe that we ought to advance names from the council of all qualified people, including those who may not share my judicial philosophy. But we've seen examples where the Judicial Council hasn't done that. It effectively has selected who goes on a court as important as the Alaska Supreme Court, and I believe that's wrong. I just want to, Mr. Chairman, if I could, just offer some brief comments about some other things you might hear. One is, I know former Chief Justice Bud Carpinetti has said that this would destroy the merit system. It doesn't do that. This resolution doesn't do anything about that. It maintains the merit system. It just says that the people of Alaska, through their public members, will have more say. The second comment I've heard people say is it will inject politics into selection. Well, let's be honest about this. Politics are already injected into the selection. It's just that the politics are monopolized by the bar members. And this is just a way to I believe, bring better balance to it. And then the last comment I'll make, and some others have commented about it, this will give greater opportunity for area representation on the council. Quite frankly, people from rural Alaska may have an opportunity to serve. And I'll note, even though I'm not suggesting that we ever make a qualification be based on your national heritage, I will just note that one of our largest people groups in Alaska is that of Alaska Native. And I'm part Alaska Native, and it's an important part of my heritage, but I believe an Alaska Native person has never served on the Alaska Judicial Council, and this could create an opportunity where that can be remedied. And so, I'll just say in conclusion, I believe the voters of Alaska deserve the right to consider this important question at the next election, and I would urge your support for the resolution.
Thank you, Warren. Representative Greenberg, I believe, has a question for you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lehman, I appreciated your comments, and I know you put a lot of care and thought, and you normally don't come before the legislature and testify on a bill. And I appreciate the fact that you're here today. And this is a bill that I consider of extreme importance, so I'm going to ask you some questions that may be tough questions, because tough bills yield tough questions. There's a difference here, is there not, between how many people are on the council and what their views have been or are, on the one hand, and who appoints them. Because what the bill does is it allows there to be three additional people on the council, but they'll all be appointed by one person, the governor. And that will increase, that will double the number of gubernatorial appointments on the council. Now, you have sat for 4 years closer than any of the rest of us to the governor. To coin a phrase, you were a heartbeat away from being the governor, and you might have been the person that would have this tremendous power. Do you see any potential for misuse to put that much power in the hands of only one person?
Well, Representative Greenberg, during my 18 years in office, elected office, 12 of those were when a governor was from another party, from your party. And you know, I might say I had to get up early to keep up with and to joust with, you know, those in, you know, where it was appropriate, you know, the governor or the you know, the governor's commissioners or people who may have represented a different philosophy from me. But the same thing could hold true. You know, I don't know who will be governor in the future, and we'd like to think of our Constitution as being relatively timeless, so the changes we make ought to be appropriate over time. But we have created the writers of the Constitution have already created a Constitution that vests a lot of power in the governor, perhaps more so than, well, certainly more so than many states. I don't know if it's more so than all states, but the governor of Alaska, through, you know, through constitutional authority, has a lot of power. Now, that, of course, is tempered by the fact that there is a pre-selection process by a judicial council. Of course, the governor gets to appoint members of the council, and the legislature confirms, but you know, I would say, you know, I wouldn't be opposed to, for example, although this is not part of this and it's another topic, but you asked the question, you're asking, you know, for my input. I would not be opposed to legislative confirmation of judges. So, there's my response.
Representative Miller, on that point, then I know you had another one.
On that point, we have a president who appoints all the Supreme Court judges, the Circuit Court judges. I mean, so you have that as a model of you know, politicizing picking judges. I mean, we have that model already with the U.S. president. And so there's no judicial council that they go through. The president just picks who he wishes, and then they're confirmed. Well, at least they're confirmed through the Senate.
Yeah, they're confirmed through the U.S. Senate. And, you know, when I said I wouldn't be opposed to legislative confirmation, I mean, we don't have quite the same model in state government that the U.S. Constitution has provided for, and, you know, and if I said, you know, I wouldn't be opposed to having confirmation by the state Senate, I think that probably would be inappropriate in Alaska because we have vested so many of our authorities and powers in both the House and the Senate. And so I would say the legislature in joint session, you know, could provide that just like it does in so many other things. That would be, you know, that would counter what may be a concern about any particular governor about too much power being vested in one person. But that's a, quite frankly, that's a topic for, you know, maybe for another day. Well, I'm not sure. Maybe.
I don't think you're going to get by quite that easy. Representative Rick has a follow-up.
Thank you. I was not about to go down the path that has been opened up by Representative Millett, but I had thought about it, and just with a final word on how things are not working at the federal level, it's true that because the way that is set up, large number of judges have not been able to get confirmed, and they have had to have some method of making sure the process works. I don't think that is a model of a way to do it, and that is one reason that I have problems with doing that here, because I see us potentially going down the same way where judges cannot get confirmed. And I just will leave it at that. I wanted to ask Mr. Lehman one other question. We have another bill before this committee, and the bill is whether to divest the governor of the ability and the legislature of the current method of selecting the attorney general, and the feeling there by the people who have supported that particular legislation was that that puts too much power in the governor and the attorney general should be elected.
That's a different bill.
No, but the point is that this would go counter to that, and I'm wondering if Mr. Lehman has any comment on that, because that seems to go directly counter. It would provide more people who are getting appointed, which is the way the other bill is exactly the opposite the way the other bill. And Mr. Lehman, please don't have to answer if you don't.
No, we'll give Lauren an opportunity, but I just want to, just housekeeping. First off, I forgot to acknowledge Representative Pruitt, who came in right at the beginning of the of our session, and he's been here the whole time. And then I also wanted to just, for the committee, we have 11 people yet left to testify. And what I'm going to do is I want to take this slow, you know, and I'm not trying to hurry anybody up. So I have contacted Representative Hughes, who was up second, and said that we would give priority to this bill today. And that means that Friday we'll commit to hearing HB 255. If that's what happens, if there's time left, we'll go there. So, Lauren, did you want to respond?
The only response I guess I'll give right now is that that is an example. You know, the selection of the Attorney General is an example of one of the powers the writers of the Constitution gave to the governor of Alaska, and, you know, they wanted a strong governor. I will just say in my younger years and then in more recent years, I was at least what I would call professional friends with former governor and former U.S. Senator Ernest Greening and former territorial governor Mike Stepovich, who passed away just recently. And both of them told me about some of their angst at being territorial governor and their lack of power in some areas. Of course, there's a whole big issue over the territory versus statehood and other things, and neither of them served as governor of the state of Alaska, but I will just try to put in historical perspective why the writers of the Constitution did what they did, and they said, we want a strong governor, because we want decisions to be made right here at home, and we want it to be vested in a person who can be accountable to the people. And
thank you very much for taking time to call in and sharing your understanding from your expertise. Is valuable. So I see no other questions at this time, but thank you. I move to David Landry in Anchorage. If you would, David, identify yourself, and it says you're representing yourself, but if you would, tell us a little bit about yourself and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman Keller. My name is David Landry. I'm a general contractor in Anchorage, and I'm just representing myself. I got to confess to having got to confess my gavel-to-gavel nerdhood. Watching this bill, it's great TV. Let me tell you.
I think Representative Lynn said, "Get a life." Everybody, is that what you said?
No. You've had a very boring life if you watch gavel-to-gavel.
Go ahead and give us your testimony, David. Thank you.
I guess I'm the first person to call in opposition to HGR 33. And one of my concerns about HGR 33 is that I think it really, really pointedly undervalues the professional knowledge that attorneys bring to the table during the process of selecting our judges. And also, just kind of by listening to the previous testimony, I really think people that are supporting us are mischaracterizing the nature of the Bar Association. So I come at this from the perspective of my business. When the time comes for me to replace a subcontractor or a vendor for whatever reason, my first order of business is to talk with my colleagues, my other contractors I know, and I get their opinions as to who does good work, who's honest, who shows up. You know, it's a very important resource for me. I think the current makeup and balance of the Judicial Council makes use of knowledgeable professional experience in a very similar way, and I think it's a good balance now as it stands. Most cases that come before a judge, and I'm not a lawyer, so I'm sure people self-represent, but they have attorneys on opposing sides of an issue or a lawsuit, so they're fighting. They're coming at this thing from opposite ends. And, they are seeking often opposite outcomes, but they have one thing in common, these attorneys. They benefit from a competent and fair judge. And I think the underlying assumption that I've heard from the previous people testifying is that the Bar Association is somehow getting together to pull one over on everybody else. And that just doesn't make sense to me. I was thinking about this, and do you really think that Wayne Anthony Ross and a staff attorney for Planned Parenthood represent a monolithic voting body called the Alaska Bar Association? I mean, that's, every one of the attorneys that's on the Judicial Council comes from their own perspective. I'm relatively confident that they don't have a Bar Association meeting beforehand and decide how the Bar Association is going to vote. I mean, these three attorney members are also citizens of the state with their own political views, their own views on how things roll. So to, kind of mischaracterize the bar aspect of this as, they're another species that's voting on our judges, I think is wrong. I mean, they're also citizens of the state. They just happen to have professional background knowledge and personal experience with the people who are applying to be judges. And I'll make it quick. I don't want to take up a lot of time. But, the previous testimony for me, there was a lot of emphasis on Lieutenant Governor Lehman and also the Senator Keller's aide that started off were really pitching the idea that this is going to be more of the people's voice in picking the judges. Well, in my mind, you would substitute the governor's voice in picking judges. And I think that, the current judicial makeup is a problem only for those who are interested in politicizing the judiciary. And I am not interested in that. A lot of people have spoken in my name as a citizen saying that they want this. I don't want this. I want to have people that are picked by their merit, you know, by people that know them, that have worked with them, that know the law, and can help put forward people that are going to be fair and consistent and, you know, good judges. I don't want a lot of political ideologues put on the bench for that reason. So that's my testimony, and I appreciate you letting me speak.
Thank you, David. I don't see any questions at this time, but I do want to thank you for calling. I also was a home builder contractor, and I know that time is money, just like you do, and we appreciate your interest in letting us know. Dave Jensen, are you online?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Dave Jensen. I'm calling in to speak to the members of the committee. I'd like to say hello to Representative Ledoux and Millett. Representative Ledoux was mayor of the Kodiak Island Borough when I was borough manager, and Representative Millett was a flight attendant at Revolution Airways when I was a vice president, and a very good one, I might add. I'd like to testify today. I'm a resident of Anchorage, Alaska. I'm testifying on my own behalf. I'm not a member of the bar. I'm not I'm currently retired. I'm a businessman retired. So, if I may, I'd like to address the committee with these thoughts. I've been an executive for over 40 years doing nothing but mostly profit to for-profit business work in Alaska. I think HJR 33 is a bad idea, and it'll be bad for private business in Alaska, and here's why. As a business executive, I tried to keep the affairs of the companies that I ran out of court. But sometimes there is no alternative, and when that happens, you end up in court. And when that happens, I want to know the judge is impartial and professional. I was never disappointed by any court decision made in the Alaska court system, because over time, I felt that the decisions were impartial, they were professional, with no private agendas or axes to grind. I certainly didn't agree with every decision that the judge has made, but I knew that the judge was impartial and professional. It was always a comfort for me to know that the judges in Alaska got to be judges in part because they're well regarded by their fellow professionals. I would never go to a doctor unless I knew he was well regarded by his colleagues in the medical profession. And I feel the same way about lawyers and judges. I think the practical effect of HJR 33 is to remove professional qualifications from the selection of judges and to substitute political loyalty for it. And in making appointments to the Judicial Council, the governor will appoint people who are loyal to him, to his party, and to his way of thinking. Those people will owe their appointment to him and will repay him by sending him the names of judicial candidates who are loyal to and allied with the governor. In a complicated commercial dispute, I could care less about the judge's political leanings. I want a judge who's smart enough and well-regarded enough in the profession to sort through the complicated commercial tangle and come up with a decision that gives certainty to me as a businessman trying to run a business, to plan my investments, and make a profit. What I don't want is a political hack who has no professional qualifications other than he's a friend of the governor. HJR 33 is approved. If it's approved, the effect will be to centralize power in the judiciary into the governor's office. The checks and balances that the framers built into our...
Excuse me, Dave. I've been interrupting others as they go here with questions, and I, if you don't mind, Representative Ledoux has a question for you, and then Representative Millett.
So, Dave, I've just got a question because you seem to think that to do this would end up with a bunch of political hacks on the bench.
Yes.
So I guess I'm just curious as to your view of the federal judiciary, which I kind of think is a pretty high up there, intellectually qualified judiciary. But they're just basically chosen by the president, and of course I'm sure he takes into account their political philosophy when he chooses them. Do you consider the federal judiciary made up a bunch of political hacks?
Representative, I feel the federal judiciary system that is used is one that troubles me in the respect that you raised the question, because to me it's like the pendulum that swings one day one way when it's one party or the other, whoever's in the president's office. You have a different group of political thinkers, different leaders, and the president picks different people. And unfortunately, the politics ebbs and flows with different parties coming into office. The last thing I think isn't good is a good system is to basically allow too much power in one person, because today that person may be in your favor, and the next flood or next change of the tides will be a different way. And I don't think the judiciary, if it's going to be immune from that kind of political tug and pull, ebb and flow, to be immune from it is really our goal. I think Alaska has a pretty good system. I don't believe that the system that you referenced with respect to the federal government is necessarily good, but it's certainly not the one we have in Alaska. I don't think we should change it.
Okay. Representative Millett was next. Okay. Representative Millett.
Hi, Dave. It's good to hear your voice again, but you just aged me in front of everybody. That was 30 years ago. I was a flight attendant, and now everybody knows how old I am.
But she was 10 when
but
she
I was
started.
Yeah, but I was 10 back then.
You're a very good flight attendant. Nice to hear your voice.
My question to you is, with the way the Judicial Council is made up now, do you believe that it's impartial, that we don't get names put forward that are left-leaning or right-leaning? Do you believe that they're impartial judges that get put forward at this point in time, if you look at the makeup of the bar? I mean, because one would say the rejections that we've had with our Republican governors, not only our previous governor, but governors prior to that, I can remember Governor Murkowski being unhappy with the three names Judicial Council put forward, but also Governor Palin, and I'm not sure I don't think Governor Parnell has been in that position yet, but do you think that that's a fair and impartial way to put forward judges, and you don't think we get a political leanings that way?
I don't think it's ever going to be a perfect way to satisfy everybody's idea that there's some left-leaning or right-leaning approach to anything. However, I'll say this. I do believe that if you're going to select professionals, that they must be regarded by their colleagues, in this case the bar, or in the case of a doctor, the medical profession, or in the case of an architect, the architects, that there be a balance, at least with people that can qualify that person based on their experience and skills. You've got that today. I recognize it's not always perfect, and there may be somebody that should have got in or shouldn't have got in. It's that way in life with everything. But I don't see how we should change, or the reason to change, from what the system we currently have to putting in the governor's office. It's such a profound change in my mind that it will disrupt the impartiality of what that judge is ultimately deciding a dispute on the bench, whether it's a civil case or whether it's a business case in my case. I want to tell you this, Sharice, you know we served, Representative Millett, we did serve Russia, revolutionarily served Russia, and I can say that as Vice President Reeve Airways, I had occasion to deal with the political judiciary in Russia. Because we served that route, I can honestly, and I don't want to testify too much here, but I can honestly attest to the fact that the nature of the political structure of the Russian judicial system is incredibly difficult to do business with. Very difficult. I just don't think we should go that way and get into a political judiciary where it's one minute it's going to be leaning one way and the next election it leans a different way. What we have today is the most balanced way to move forward. So that's my thought on that.
Thanks, Dave. Well, you know, I got to spend lots of extra nights in Russia because of the way they operate over there. But I don't think that it's a fair comparison to the way Russia operates, the way we operate, and we're completely different. I mean, you know, I would say that, although I agree with this bill, I would say that we're far from the corruption that we encountered when we were flying over to Russia back and forth. I don't know if that was judges or if that was just pure corruption that Reeve dealt with on a regular basis as we flew over there. I mean, you know very well how many times we got stuck in customs over in Russia. That was, you know, for a 21-year-old girl, that was pretty exciting, also pretty scary. But to compare Russia's judicial picks with what we're doing in this bill, I think it's a pretty harsh comparison.
Well, I don't want to make it harsh. I want to draw the distinction that as Vice President Reeve, while you were a flight attendant and I was dealing with the administrative issues that the corporation Reeve had in dealing with Russia, I had to use Russian attorneys to deal with the Russian court judges, and I knew the system wasn't working right. I knew that the system was rigged, and you knew it. You knew it from the difficulties you had in Russia. I don't want that. I want to know that as a businessman working in Alaska, that when I've got a judge who's judging an issue before me or anybody in the courtroom, that judge is impartial, professional, and is able to make a decision that's appropriate to the case. My point about Russia is merely that I didn't trust the court system there one bit, and I don't think we need to go to that. I don't want the Alaska court system to ever be questioned because it may have become political or is being perceived as too beholden to the governor or something like that. That's my point on that.
Representative Groomberg has a question, and Representative Ledoux.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It may be a little more of a statement since we seem to have wandered down into that area in the recent last few minutes.
If I could, I'm going to interrupt on that point. What we're doing is the same thing we do with all amendments that come before us, constitutional amendments. As you have pointed out, we've all agreed this is a very serious matter, and we're just trying to move really slow in this. I'm not trying to force anything. So with that, what I'm going to do is take a brief, real brief at ease, because I want to ask a couple that are signed up to testify. We're just checking to see, you know, the people that are here in the room to testify, if they were available, if this, I mean, this will obviously continue into Friday's hearing. Representative Groomberg, go ahead.
Rather than my asking the question instantly, I'm wondering if there's anybody online who has to testify today.
I was going
to
ask that next.
Please.
Why don't you go ahead?
I'll yield if you want to do that. That's more important.
Okay. Representative Groomberg is going to yield. We have online a series of, I think, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And if there's any of you that have a priority situation, if you're taking off from work and you could be getting paid, or if it'd be a problem for you to continue on Friday, please sing out right now. I will try to get to you, but I'm trying not to cut it down everybody's got 2 minutes left to testify. We do that often around here. Sometimes we're forced to, but this is an important amendment to the Constitution. We want to take our time. So, an opportunity, anybody online would like to testify sooner rather than later.
Are you getting paid for your time? Yeah, this is George Pierce calling from Castillo, Alaska.
George, yes.
Thanks for taking my call, fellas.
If you could hold on a little bit, George. I wasn't inviting you to testify right now, but I will put you up so you don't have to come back on Friday. But we're in the middle of another comment here. So just stand by a little bit, and we'll try that again. Representative Ledoux?
Well, I had a question that I wanted to ask Dave.
Dave, you're still there, right? Dave Jensen?
Yes, I am.
So, you know, Dave, I actually share some of your concerns about politicizing the bench on hot button social issues. I mean, if you've got a Democrat, they're going to go one way. If they're a Republican, they're going to go another way. But your concern seems to be more for, you want to make sure that you've got a smart, honest judiciary for purposes of doing business. And I look at the federal bench and I see, okay, under a Republican administration, you might get, you know, a judge who's going to lean more conservative on the various social issues, and under a Democrat, one who's going to lean more liberal. But all of the judges, well, there are a few exceptions here and there, whether they're appointed by D's or R's, certainly seem to be pretty high level when it comes to your typical business kind of questions and litigation kind of questions. I mean, there's a real high bar for the federal judiciary. So I guess from the perspective of business, I guess I don't really follow why you'd worry about this.
Well, with all respect, Gabrielle, I never had a court case that I was involved with in the federal system. None of my business dealings rose to that level or were at that level. All of my business dealings involving the judiciary have been with the state. So the system that you referenced with regard to the federal government, while I'm not here to discuss or nor do I support it or have any opinion on how that system is, my concern is that we don't want to seem to do what the federal government has by changing our Constitution. I find that the current constitutional language with respect to the Judicial Council and its makeup has presented and provided a very fair and balanced means to provide judges that have, in my case, been, in every case, been, I thought, impartial. And if we change that, if we want to make that something like the federal system, we would potentially politicize the state system. And that's the furthest thing that would make sense for me. I'm only attesting, speaking to the state system and this particular House joint resolution. When we talk about the federal government, I'm outside of my pay grade. That's not what I was thinking about in terms of discussing this debate. So I can't speak that I like the federal system or I dislike it. I understand that it seems to be political to me, but thankfully I didn't have to be in that during my business career in that forum.
Okay, Representative Gruber.
Thank you very much. Mr. Jensen, I appreciate your comments. Are you aware that the Alaska selection method is based upon what's called the Missouri Plan, which was a procedure that was developed in the state of Missouri? And of course, Missouri wasn't a state, wasn't in existence, wasn't even part of this country when the federal constitution was enacted and drafted, and there was no such model upon which the drafters could have looked when they selected the method that they did. It just didn't exist. This was something that was many, many years later, and at the time when our framers drafted the Alaska Constitution in 1955, we had over 100 years experience under the federal constitution and were able to look at other constitutional methods like the Missouri Plan and choose from them, and chose instead of the federal plan a different plan, and that's what there was a conscious decision for. And people hadn't always been very happy with the way the federal plan had worked. In the New Deal, there was a very concerted effort to pack the Supreme Court because they didn't like the decisions that were coming out of the Supreme Court in that case. And there had to be some adjustments made in the judicial philosophy on the court, but there was an attempt to pack the court like there is an attempt, I'm going to say, to pack the Judicial Council here. And that was rebuffed, and I expect, by the way, that if this goes to voter, it'll be rebuffed too. And the model, the federal model, is a lot different in the way it works.
Representative Greenberg, if you could, is a question. Now, Dave is called in to testify.
I want to get this. My question will be okay. Coming here.
Okay.
The system works a lot different federally. The chief executive appoints, names somebody to a court, but then the legislature has extensive hearings on that. It's a full-time Congress, and they get into the qualifications much more than we ever would do and ever do in our vetting of, in this case, members of the Judicial Council. Usually they come before us and speak for about 10 minutes, and we routinely pass them on. Particularly the higher courts at the federal level, the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee vets them at great length, and we don't have the capability, or we certainly haven't done that. Any comments on what I've said?
Well, thank you for enlightening me on the Missouri plan. I'm not aware, or was not aware, of what the framers of the Constitution in Alaska used as a basis. My only thought, Representative, is that the system that the framers used has been put in place. Without regard to the history of the reasons why, I just believe that the current makeup of the three members of the bar and three trusted members of the public, with obviously the Chief Justice being the deciding vote, is a means to know, from my perspective as a businessman, that the profession is being looked after by professionals. The bar is a professional organization. I think that how the public regards that profession and regards the court system in Alaska should be based on a complete feeling of trust that they are professionals. As I mentioned earlier, I believe that in the medical profession, when I go to a medical doctor, I want to know that the medical profession, the other doctors around him, regard him as a good professional doctor. I don't want to go to somebody I won't go to somebody who I find may not be qualified or is not regarded as a good doctor, because he shouldn't be a good doctor and shouldn't get patients, and I don't want to go there. That shouldn't be the case with the court system. There are certainly lawyers that may not be regarded by their peers as being good lawyers. That's, someone mentioned earlier, testimony. That happens all the time. I think that was former Lauren LeMann. I agree with him on that. It happens all the time. I don't think, though, that having that morph into the judicial system with respect to judges should ever happen. If the judicial system believes there's a bad judge, they tell us, and I get to read the pamphlet about that, and they have done that. I've read about judges they believe shouldn't be reelected. I believe that they're available year in or all year long, looking at qualifications, whether the respective members of that committee can agree on the qualifications of a judge. That, I understand, is always open to dispute. It happens in every committee, whatever it is. But when you centralize the committee membership by letting the governor appoint a whole bunch of citizens to a committee that should be based on professional qualifications, I think we're opening the door for serious problems with how we would perceive our justice system in Alaska.
Thank you, Dave. I really appreciate your time calling in. And sometimes our questions get a little rambly. I'm sorry. I want to limit the committee, please, interact with the people that call in and take their time as closely as we can here. I kind of allowed you to, Representative Grunberg, to give us a great lesson. It's very interesting, but I think Representative Pruitt wanted to respond to that. But then after that, let's just press on here with the other testifiers. Representative Pruitt.
Thank you. I just want to respond to the very last piece in Representative Grunberg's. He mentioned that a lot of times we gloss over these people, but I'd like to remind you that there was, I think it was 2, maybe 3 years ago, we had an individual who was up for Judicial Council, and he, because of the legislature, he ended up pulling his name. We didn't have to vote him down, but he ended up pulling his name. So I want to make it, I just want to stress the role that the legislature plays in appointing these individuals. We do our due diligence, and I think that we need to give ourselves the credit that we deserve for asking questions on these individuals that are currently appointed. And I would expect that, you know, if something were to change, that I would expect we would play our role then too.
Mr. So. Chair,
Representative Gruber.
I see. I'm correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
Wow. What we're going to do is go to George. We're going to go to George Pearson. Kasiloth, would you give us our testimony? We'll try not to ramble quite as much, and then we're going to go to Darlene O'Shea in Anchorage. George, go ahead.
Thanks for letting me testify, and I'll hurry up and get on with my rambling so somebody else can speak.
I wasn't accusing you, sir, of rambling. I was accusing us of rambling. You go right ahead with your testimony.
Well, I have been accused of rambling before.
Yeah, identify yourself for the record again and tell us who you're representing.
My name is George Pierce. I live in Kasiloth, Alaska, and I'm representing myself. I think this is a very bad bill. I oppose this bill, HGR 33. You know, I worry it could and will shift the balance of the judicial system, a system that is not broken and that's been around since statehood. You know, it's we need to stay out of the Constitution. I can remember here, if you guys remember here, a couple years ago, that question was put on the ballot, whether or not we wanted to open up and have a constitutional convention, and we said no. So rather than 2 years later coming up off these nonsense bills, maybe we should just go back and ask that question on the ballot right now, whether or not we want to invade the Constitution. You know, to get into the Constitution, this is not, shouldn't be your agenda or Alec. It's about the Alaskans. So that's the most important thing. You know, and this bill, it's stacking the deck. Could it be you'd rather control the judicial process, you know, to steer it in your direction to benefit your agendas? You know, this bill seems to me like it's a waste of time, and Representative Kelly wants the public members to outnumber lawyers 2-1. Is non-lawyers making decisions? I don't think that's a very good idea. The governor is known for not making very good appointments. And it will change every time we get a new governor. 15 times in the last 39 years did a chief justice vote to break a 3-3 tie, with attorneys on one side and public members on the other side. This bill gives control of the council to the governor. 6 out of 10, it's stacking the deck. We need to stop what we're doing here and look what we've got. This has been working since statehood. I think we should leave it as is and stay out of the Constitution. Thank you.
Thank you, George, for your testimony. Appreciate it. Darlene O'Shea went offline. I hope I didn't discourage her and scare her away. We're going to go to Benjamin Malott and Nicole Bormio from the Alaska Federation of Natives, and they're in Anchorage. Go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Nicole speaking. AFN has three concerns with this HJR 33. First concern is that Alaska's constitution is widely acknowledged as one of the best constitutions in the country. Accordingly, AFN believes there should be a clearly demonstrated reason to amend our state constitution before such a process is undertaken. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, there is simply no evidence to suggest that the Judicial Council has failed to function effectively or efficiently in performing its duties. In fact, Alaska's judiciary has been free of the corruption, scandal, and other ills that have plagued other non-merit-based systems. And this is largely due to the efforts of the Judicial Council. Second, HJR 33 seeks to increase the number of judicial council members for a host of reasons, including guarding against attorney dominance. Again, ASN believes there should be clearly demonstrated evidence of such dominance. However, no evidence exists to our knowledge to support the proposition that attorneys outwill non-attorneys in the selection of judges. In fact, ASN understands that in the last 30 years, only 15 of the approximate 1,100 votes cast by the Judicial Council has resulted in a split between attorneys and non-attorneys. Finally, the fiscal note submitted by the Alaska Judicial Council shows an increased cost of $12,000 for each fiscal year in 2016 through 2020. ASN believes this increase in $60,000 is entirely unnecessary for the reasons we stated earlier and by the previous commenter, and suggests that these funds could be better spent elsewhere. Thank you for your time and consideration of our comments.
Well, thank you, Nicole. You very clearly put them on the record. I have a question from Representative Grunberger.
Thank you very much, Nicole. Were you aware that in the operating budget, the request of the Judicial Council for an increment of $20,000, which could have been used to make certain that...
Order. Okay. Yeah. That's a budget issue. This is not, has nothing to do with this bill. I just don't want to get into the path of where we started talking about the cuts to any department that we're talking about. So I would respectfully request that we don't talk about reductions in the budget and the operating budget, especially because they haven't been on the floor yet. Representative Grunberg. Mr. Chair, I was not planning to, but when there was testimony as to the
cost of this bill that brought us into the budget, and I just wanted to show that here was an attempt to increase the money while the money for the Judicial Council was not being increased. Okay. And I've made my point.
Oh, you did. And we can say we can disregard it, but we all heard it, and it's on the record, and we'll leave it there. Okay. So, anyway, sorry about the interruption there, Nicole. Is Benjamin there, and would he like to testify? Does he have the same points? Are you representing him, too?
No, I have the same points as Nicole has made. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Benjamin. I really appreciate your clarity and your brevity. We'll go to Byron Charles. Oh, I'm sorry. We have another question. I'm sorry. Representative Foster. I was distracted and missed it. Representative Foster.
Well, okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Nicole, I just wanted to thank you for your testimony. Was this a resolution that was passed by the AFN board, or was this passed at the annual meeting in Fairbanks this past October?
Thank you, Representative Foster. This was a resolution that was passed by the ASN Legislative and Litigation Committee at last month's meeting in February.
Okay, thank
However,
you.
However, the committee acts as the full board in between regular scheduled board meetings.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole. Right. I see no other questions. This time I won't hurry. I look carefully. So thank you again. Byron Charles, Ketchikan, if you would state your name and who you represent and give us your testimony.
Good afternoon, sir. My name is Byron Charles. Thank you for the opportunity to make presentation today. One of the interesting questions I have after listening to everybody, including Grunberg, to mention about the federal government, the question I have here on this is a decision processing making system that's taking place here. This committee here is kind of like an administrative body with some powers and authority. Now, why isn't it that a representative from the local community, including the federal government, sitting there as part of this decision making system? Wouldn't you agree that if it were, it would alleviate a lot of conflicts on a government-to-government level? Those are my questions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for putting those questions on the record, and I don't see any questions for you at this time. So thank you, Byron. Looks like we are going to get to a few here on in the room. So what I want to do is give Walter Carpinetti, give retirement here the first option, the chance to come up. And
12 minutes.
you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Walter Carbonetti. I'm here representing only myself, no other entity. I have to say I'm probably not going to be on my best game here because I thought you weren't going to get to me. I'll do my best to summarize my thoughts. I guess I would say I think there's three reasons not to advance this this legislation. And I'd like to emphasize, I don't think that this subject matter is one that involves an attorney versus non-attorney split on the council. It just doesn't. I mean, you can look at the last 2 years and you can say there were three votes that people are unhappy with. Our Constitution has endured for 55 years. It's been amended only 28 times, and some of those were technical amendments, changing the name from the Secretary of State to the Lieutenant Governor. It's something that should be entered into only carefully and only if there's a really good reason to do it. And when you've had over 1,100 votes, and there's only been 15 times that the non-attorney members were on one side and the attorney members were on the other, you just don't have a problem, in my view. I mean, this Constitution has worked well for 55 years. And if the problem is this sort of generalized claim of attorney dominance, of the attorneys running the show, this 4-3, because the Chief Justice obviously is an attorney, the facts do not bear that out. The facts do not bear that out. And I think it's really important not to lose sight of that, because what you're asked to do in this legislation is change something that has worked well. And so my first point is the point that Senator Begich made in answering questions the other day: if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I think there's a heavy burden on those who would amend our Constitution to show that there's a problem, that something is not working, not hypothetical, not with generalized talk about accountability or citizen participation. And by the way, all of the lawyers are citizens. I guess I take a little umbrage at that. I mean, but in any event, the burden is on those who want to change it to show what the problems have been. Now, I may be old school, but if somebody says a judicial selection system isn't working, I tend to think of, well, do we have judges that are being indicted? Do we have judges that are involved in scandals? Do we have judges that are receiving kickbacks? Do we have the kinds of problems that we see in lots of other judiciaries? Not all the time, and not as much as some other branches, but I don't think we have them at all in Alaska. And I would take slight exception with former Lieutenant Governor Lehman. I don't think I said that changing the system here would lead, and I'd stand to be corrected if I did, but I don't think I said it would destroy the merit system. I think what I said was it could destroy the merit selection system. And that should be a very big reason to give anyone who's thinking of voting in favor of this pause. And here's why I say it could destroy the merit selection system. Right now, there is no entity that controls the names that go to the governor. There are, and if you insist on thinking of lawyers as non-citizens, or lawyers on one side and citizens on the others, remember the numbers. It's hardly ever happened. There's no entity that controls that breakdown. Once you change it to 10-5 or 6-3, I guess the current one is 6-3, you've given the governor the right to say what the panel that he or she looks at is going to be composed of. And the governor does not have that power right now, and the framers thought hard about whether the governor should have that power. Commenting on former Lieutenant Governor Lauren Lehman's statement about our strong governor system, I haven't read every constitution of every state closely, but I have the firm opinion that we have the strongest governor system in the United States. And our framers did it that way on purpose. They wanted accountability to rest with one person. That's why our attorney general isn't elected, for example. The only elected positions statewide are the governor and the lieutenant governor. Everyone else, and the lieutenant governor is obviously accountable to the governor. So we have very clear responsibility in our system. And our framers thought about how much power the governor should have. And even though they made our governor, in my view, the strongest governor in the United States, and everybody, I think, would agree, one of the strongest governors, they stopped short of saying, we're going to let the governor pick the majority of people of those who nominate our judges. And they did that because they wanted to create a system in which the judiciary would have some independence. And I think if the governor can name the majority, there will be nominees who represent the governor's point of view. It's in the nature of how a political system works. I don't want to sound too preachy, but I was on the Judicial Council a long time ago.
If I could, and just to clarify, Walter, are you saying that the reason we don't have problems in this state like they have in other states is because we have an attorney-dominated Judicial Council that's small?
No, I don't think we have an attorney-dominated system. I think we have a system that's evenly balanced. I mean, we really do. Because, again, out of over 1,100 votes, there's only been 15 times that the attorneys and the non-attorneys split evenly, and the Chief Justice had to make a decision. And the figures I've been given is that on 10 of those 15 occasions, the Chief agreed with the attorneys, and on 5 of those occasions, the Chief agreed with the non-attorneys.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah. I still want to go back and check those figures, because I was told when I started it was pretty close to even, and I know that it happened to me 3 times. 2 of the times I agreed with the non-attorneys, 1 of the times I agreed with the attorneys. 2 of those times were to send names up, 1 of those times was not to send the name up. But I guess the point that I was making is, if the governor can name the majority of the people on the council, then there will be nominees who represent the governor's point of view. I want to take exception. I respect the former lieutenant governor greatly, but I want to take exception with one other thing he said. He said politics are already in the system. You may not believe this, and all I can do is speak from my own experience, but I don't think that's true. I do not believe that's true. I'll tell you an anecdote that happened to me within the last 2 weeks to illustrate it. I was in Seattle. I was buying a bicycle, and I looked up an old friend, and he was helping me. And at one point, he said about one of my colleagues on the Supreme Court, I knew him years and years ago, before he became a lawyer, before he went to law school. Is he still conservative? Is he still real conservative? And I was shocked when he asked me that. I was shocked. Not because he is or he isn't, but because somebody that I had sat with in a very intimate political setting with for several years was a person who was a cipher to me in terms of my answering that question. I did not know the answer to that, and I started saying, well, he does this, and this is how he approaches cases, and this is what he does with the record, and this is what he does with the attorney's arguments, and here's how he acts in conference, and I was just sort of blithering because I did not know the answer to that question. And later I thought, well, you know, I was feeling kind of embarrassed about that to myself, and then I thought, no, that's favorable. That's good that I could not tell a person whether one of my colleagues was conservative or not conservative. I don't know if he voted for Governor Romney or President Obama. I don't know what his views are on lots and lots of issues, because in terms of the selection process and in terms of what the court does when we're considering cases, those kinds of issues just don't come up. They're not part of what we do. And, I mean, perhaps the former lieutenant governor was saying politics are already in the system because some of the people on the council vote one way or vote another way based on what they think somebody will do in the future on a particular case. I don't know. If that's what he meant, I don't know if that's true or not. I can tell you that I was on the council as a lawyer in the early 1980s. I was on the council again as the ex officio chair as Chief Justice from 2009 to 2012. I never, in either of those times, ever heard somebody say, I think this person will vote the right way on X issue, or I think this person will vote the wrong way on X issue. Those things just don't come up in the council. And I think what comes out of that is that you get names going to the governor of people who the council members believe, whether they're liberal or conservative or they even have an idea about those things, people that will be careful lawyers, that will read the record, that will act with integrity, that will be respectful of both sides that come in front of them, that will keep their minds open until they've heard all the arguments and they've heard their colleagues and it's time to make a vote, and will, in short, be good judges. And what I fear from a system in which the governor appoints the majority of people on the council is that some of those values may be lost. If I could just say one more thing with regard to this. When I was first on the council in the 80s, I came to the conclusion, and I hold it today, that the framers were brilliant in setting up what I think is a two-stage process. We call it a merit selection system. I think it's a merit slash political selection system, and here's why. The merit is in the first stage. It's when you go to the council. It's when you get through the council, and that's when the council looks at professional reputation. It looks at intelligence. It looks at writing skill. It looks at fairness and integrity. It looks at all the things that you hope would be in a judge, and it sends those people through. And in fact, it sends the best of those people through. The second stage is the political stage, and I say that using it, well, thank you. I say that using it not, you know, as an insult or opprobrium or disrespect. I mean, I think politics is a noble venture, and I regard politics as trying to figure out what the best policy is on a given issue, and if you're in an elected position representing your constituents and coming to the right conclusion. And the political part of the selection of judges is when the governor, who is there as a result of politics, chooses from among the candidates that hopefully are all going to be excellent, the one that is closest to his or her views. And I mean, I believe that elections have consequences and should have consequences. And I believe that that's the proper place for the politics to come into the selection process. And that's why our framers wisely decided, let's give the people a check too. 3 years after you're on the bench, you stand for a retention election. But what I'm afraid of is if you give the governor six spots and on the council, you're essentially going to be giving the governor the power to say all of those that the governor wants. And those may be people that meet all of these attributes, but they may not be. And that's why I say it could lead to the destruction of the merit. And it's not worth that risk, in my opinion.
Millet, and then I have a question, too.
Thank you, Justice Carpinetti. I remember the very first time I met you, I had no idea who you were, and I sat next to you on an airplane, and we actually talked, you know, the philosophy of politics. You didn't know who I was, I didn't know who you were, and we had a very, very honest conversation about a lot of things, and I respect you because what you said on that airplane to me is held true through your career as I've watched you. But what I will...
I'm worried about what I said on the airplane.
No. We flew to Sitka.
I remember. Yeah. I remember the time.
It was all day conversation.
All day, yes.
So I guess what I would ask you is, looking at the resolution before us, would you feel more comfortable if the six that the governor appointed would be attorneys? It says non-attorneys here, but would you feel better if he appointed the attorneys? They'd still be in good standing with the bar. They'd still be, as you say, fair, competent. I mean.
Well, let me answer by saying I would be perhaps minimally less uncomfortable, but that's damning it with faint praise. And here's why. The governor, in making any selection, whether the person is an attorney or a non-attorney, is clearly going to look for people who think the way he or she thinks, and that's fine. I'm just worried about having a majority of those people on a given council. I think if you have three people who are charged with, who work with the candidates, who know, I mean, the Constitutional Convention minutes are really interesting. I mean, they say, yeah. Other than the fact that it's kind of sexist, because they always talk about he and, yeah. You know, brothers and stuff, but this was 50 years ago. They talk about is lawyers know other lawyers well, and lawyers do not want to put somebody on the bench that they think is not going to be responsive to the law. And, you know, 99%+ of the cases have nothing to do with the kinds of things that gather all of our attention all the time, the hot button issues, the big issues. I mean, most of the things that come in front of courts are trying to figure out what you all meant when you wrote a statute that maybe doesn't cover a situation that we have.
Right.
And, you know, politics just doesn't enter, in any sense, doesn't enter into so many of the decisions. And what I'm hopeful is that we continue with a system that has worked really hard to put a smorgasbord of choice in front of the governor, sometimes smaller, sometimes greater, but of all of whom we can say would be excellent. And, you know, can I say one other thing? There was a mention of Governor Murkowski's concerns about a panel that he had that he... Somebody once said there weren't enough. There were four people that went up in front of the governor. There were a lot of names, but there wasn't one name that he wanted. And there was almost a constitutional crisis, and there was a meeting between the chief of staff and the chief justice and the judicial council, and eventually the governor, I would say, did the right thing and made an appointment. The person that he appointed is now on the Supreme Court, and, I mean, the original appointment was to the Superior Court. That person is now on the Supreme Court, and there is no doubt about what an excellent choice he was for the Superior Court and for the Supreme Court. This system worked. I mean, you can take, I mean, any one decision somebody might have heartburn with, but it's a good system.
Follow-up, just one quick follow-up.
Quick follow-up.
So I guess, and I've talked to the chair of the Judicial Council about this, and both Nancy about this, is the bar poll. The bar poll comments in the comments section that other attorneys can put on about other attorneys, there some of them go unsigned, and I know that you had told me that they don't put much weight to them, but I would think that it would be like a blog. I mean, I've been blogged about like crazy, and from people I don't even know. It could be Max that's blogging about me because they're unsigned. They carry no weight with me because if they won't put their name to it, then I'm not going to carry it. To me, it's just some, you know, person that doesn't like me, my political views, or like me as a person, or whatever. You're always going to have people like that. So in the bar poll, you have this section where you can write comments about other judges, and it doesn't have to be signed. I would think that those that would carry no weight whatsoever. I mean, we talk about this bill, maybe it is what Representative Ledoux said. Maybe it is something that we should look at in the regulations of the Judicial Council, because you are, the Judicial Council made up their practice themselves. There was no constitutional direction on how the process was to be worked.
Bylaws?
Right.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you raised that. There's a number of things to say. First, it's Judicial Council policy as enshrined in the bylaws that anonymous comments won't be given any weight unless they are investigated into and there's something found to be there. Secondly, in defense of anonymous comments, let me say this. You're talking about somebody who could go on to a very powerful position, and there are some people that just aren't comfortable signing their name to that. I mean, we urge the people to do it. We say we won't give any weight to it unless it's otherwise verified. But the question is, do you want to have anonymous comments and have the possibility of learning about something that might really be a problem with further investigation, or not have it? And I think we've reached the best balance that we can. We've said we will accept them. Let me give you an example. If you get an anonymous comment that an applicant for a judgeship has a serious drinking problem, that's probably something that, if there's any evidence of it, you want to look into. And if there's more than one comment, if there's anything that suggests that it's verified, even if it's given anonymously, then the council will look into it. The executive, it happened a few years ago when I was the chief. The executive director of the council went to the locality, talked to lots and lots of people, investigated specific incidents that were claimed on such and such a date. I saw this fellow drunk. You know, I don't think he would be a good judge. Looked into it, came to the conclusion that it was an anonymous statement that had no support behind it, notified the council of that, and we went on. But what if it had come out the other way? What if it had come out that, oh, there might be a real problem here? The council would want to know that. I mean, the council goes into people's lives very, very carefully. We get criminal records. We get credit records. We talk to the lawyers on the other side of cases that the person's been involved in. We talk to the judges. I mean, if you're going to apply to be a judge, you're going to be held upside down and shaken by the ankles, and we're going to find out if there's any problems. And while I don't, you know, approve of people writing something anonymously that, to the best of our knowledge, when we've investigated it, turns out to be true, I'd rather have the escape valve there and trust that people will do the right thing and we'll investigate it to the best we can, rather than not have it at all and maybe let someone get by that's going to have a problem later. That's the best explanation I can give.
If I could, just a little bit of housekeeping. 1 minute. We're 7 minutes over time. We will continue until somebody yells uncle, you know, until you're done with your testimony. But I do have a couple things. You know, one, I want to put on the record that I appreciate your service to the state. I appreciate your role as a Supreme Court Justice, and I consider you a friend. And in that context, you know, I really appreciate you coming here and interacting with us. I do have a question on whether or not you're defining, if you exclude judicial philosophy from whatever definition of political you're using. I'm just checking the Constitution, and it's without regard to political affiliations, but there is a connect between the judiciary and the citizenry of the state of Alaska. If that were not true, there wouldn't be the effort to try to make a geographic representation. Sure. And there has to be some kind of a litmus, I guess, that is used by the citizenry when there's a retention vote. So there is an element of what, you can't escape political in the way I would use the term. And, of course, we're all politicians. We have to get here, letting people decide whether or not we can represent them. So we're out there and we're more visible on this kind of thing. But to me, the Alaska Bar Association worldview or their judicial philosophy may or may not align with what the majority of the people of Alaska have. So it just seems like at some point here, it's completely legitimate to put the, for example, judicial philosophy, maybe even liberal conservative, as a consideration for the people to have out there. And I don't think that the founders of the state intended to make the isolation so much that it was that the judicial branch is completely beyond and above those kind of judgments.
I don't disagree with any of that. I'm just concerned that in seeking the right balance that it not be changed such that political considerations, judicial philosophy, however you want to call it, which I think is totally proper at the second stage, doesn't get moved into the first stage and then overwhelm the first stage. So you really potentially lost the idea of merit selection.
Good. Yeah, and that's what we're looking for, is that right line, and that's why we're proposing this. Representative Ledoux.
Hi, Bud. How you doing?
A little bit nervous.
Well, then you can understand how people were so nervous when they went in front of you. So I've got a question for you. One of the rationales for this bill is to make sure that the Chief Justice is not put in the position of having to vote and maybe be accused of partisan behavior. Do you want to comment about that from your position as a former Chief Justice and person on the Judicial Council, whether sure. you thought that that was ever a problem as far as you were concerned?
Sure. I would, and I appreciate the chance to answer this question, and I would note that you stated it a little bit differently than, I'm sorry, Ernest, I missed his last name, but the aide stated it. He stated that it was to keep the Chief Justice out of a conflict of interest. And you stated it as you just did, which wasn't exactly conflict of interest, but in an awkward position or something like that.
I think he kind of stated both along the way, but either one, if
let
you
me,
could respond to.
Let me take
to.
Both. I don't understand the conflict of interest. I've heard it before in an earlier committee. I said, I'm not trying to be willfully ignorant. I just don't understand what the conflict is. I heard one speaker say, well, the Chief Justice, if it's a judge who's going up for a higher court, a Superior Court judge for the Court of Appeals or whatever, then, the Chief Justice is put in the position of saying yes or no to a judge. Well, I'm not trying to be flip, but newsflash, that's what the Chief Justice does every day of his life or her life, because what we do is review the decisions of other judges, and we say, you got it right or you got it wrong. So it's not a conflict to say yes or no to a judge. It's not a conflict to say, I'm directed by the Constitution to send the very best names on to the governor. The constitutional phrase in the debates was the tallest timber. And it's not a conflict to say, while you're very qualified, or you're a very good judge, or while I think you may be qualified for this job, I'm going to vote no here because the other candidates who have already made it through are clearly in a higher group than you. And without violating any confidences, that's exactly what I did the one time that I voted no. And I called the judge and I explained, I think you're a strong candidate.
Could I interrupt? How about you already indicated that you'd come back on Friday.
Sure.
Would you come back and answer that question when you get here? Because we could go on, and it's really enjoyable and enlightening in it for all of us. But we can start the committee meeting. But let's start that part of it at about 1:30. That'll give us time to deal with the other bill first. And then we'll continue on. We have several others that will want to testify. I'll try not to make duplicate testimony, but we'll let you start, and we'll go from there on Friday. But thank you for indulging us on this. So
thank you,
with
Mr.
that,
Chairman.
We're adjourned.
Thank you, members.